This is GKW. Welcome to another edition of Good Karma Wrestling. I'm Gabe Neitzel from ESPN Milwaukee with Brian Rowitz from ESPN West Palm. Catch him on ESPN 1000 in Chicago. He is Jonathan Hood. All right, boys, a lot of things to dive into. Coming off of Night of Champions, we're really starting up the build to what's going to be a busy weekend of pro wrestling next weekend, All In, Saturday night's main event, Evolution 2. But where we start is off of last night, 300th episode of AEW, who's now been around for 5 years. Hard to believe, 300 episodes of their satellite programming that is Dynamite. 100th episode of Collision coming up this weekend as well. So we start here. 5 years of AEW has been blank.
A learning experience for Tony Khan. And I think that that's fair. That is a B-plus product now. And it was an A-plus when we first started, all of us on Good Karma Wrestling, because it was new and it was fresh. But I think there's been a learning curve. Like, for instance, what did you just say, Gabe? Episode 300 for Dynamite.
Mm-hmm.
Where was the special package for 300 episodes? Even if you would have given us a quick flash of CM Punk, that would have popped the crowd, right? Just like, oh, my God. 300. Also, on top of that, if this was Raw or if this is SmackDown, you have people that were involved in the show over the years. A Bryan Danielson would be there last night. There would be others that used to be in AEW that would be there. But again, that's the learning curve for Tony Khan and AEW. Something special like 300 episodes, Brian, but yet it was just another show trying to get to All In.
Yeah, I think that's fair. That would have been cool to have some of those packages, even just coming back in from segments. But they don't do stuff like that. To me, the word I use is refreshing. Like, as a pro wrestling fan, it is refreshing to have AEW. Yes, there are some headaches. Yes, there are some head scratchers. But I know when those pay-per-views come around every single month or every other month, it's going to deliver. You're going to get 4 hours of just damn good wrestling with very few lowlights. And to me, that is the refreshing part, to where the other side is what we saw Saturday Night of Champions. And you see main events like that, and you're like, I don't enjoy this as much. Like, AEW is what I enjoy as a wrestling fan.
Yeah, I mean, and I understand, you know, you're 300 episodes in. You know, when WWE has done, like, Raw 500 or Raw 1000, when they've done that, and they've brought in some of the legends, it's because, well, those legends didn't really have any other place to go, and they're just kind of out there. Whereas, you know, some of the people that they've had have gone. But you still have Bryan Danielson, you still have Sting. Like, you could have brought those two. Like, and Bryan Danielson just showed up for an ROH appearance a couple of weeks ago.
Maybe he's exclusive to Honor Club now. You don't know.
You know, no, that's true. I don't know.
No, that's me exclusive to Honor Club. Me.
But, I mean, 5 years of AEW, I would say, has been a success. Like, the fact that they're, I mean, when they started, there were a handful of people didn't think that they would make it this far. Get a second television deal, be able to build and have the relationships that they have with CMLL and New Japan Pro Wrestling, and be able to put on the shows that they have, right? So I think 5 years of AEW has been success. Has it been just, you know, we love to talk about this with the Green Bay Packers all the time up here in Wisconsin about how growth isn't linear, you know? So it's not like, oh, they started here and now they're just going. No, I mean, there have been bumps in the road, ups and downs, bad decisions, good decisions. I'd like to think that Tony Khan's getting a little bit better as he continues to grow with experience. I'd like to think that he would be more open now than he maybe was early, you know, listening to some of the great legends that they do have behind the scenes in terms of helping him book all of the wrestling that they now have, between having a flagship show, having the secondary show, having ROH. There's a lot of wrestling that needs to be written and booked. So leaning on other people to do that while also having other responsibilities within the Khan family, I think, would just be a better thing for Tony. So hopefully they continue to grow and learn. But, I mean, they're holding a stadium show within the United States here in a couple of weeks. They've done Wembley Stadium a couple of different times. I don't know how you can look at anything, unless you're a troll on Twitter, as, you know, AEW is nothing but a successful wrestling story right now.
No question. And they have the best roster in the United States. Mm-hmm. We can go side by side. There's no question about it, because you have Okada, you have Ospreay, you've got so many great stars that's on the AEW roster, and it's just a lot of talent All I know is that AEW came in as the alternative, and they've kicked ass, and they've got themselves another streaming slash TV deal. Very few can say that in this country, that they actually have one of those. So I'm happy for their success. We can nitpick it to death, and that's fine. But they've given us two options, guys. Either one, as what Gabe said, just watch all the PLEs, watch all the pay-per-views, or two, watch the TV. Sometimes the TV does not match up with the pay-per-view, but that's okay. If nothing else, on Wednesdays and Saturdays, I'm getting bangers. I'm getting great match. I'm getting, but it's not like 5 minutes. I'm getting matches that go through the break. It's 10, 12, 15-minute matches. So it's where the best wrestle, that's what they say. They really deliver more times than not, especially on the pay-per-views.
And we're getting new stars because of their existence. Like, you look at their current roster, friend of show Kyle Fletcher. Like, because of AEW, he is what he is now, which is arguably one of the best wrestlers in the world. We're seeing more Ospreay. Tony Storm and Swerve are getting opportunities they wouldn't have gotten in the past. And Shelton Benjamin said it recently. He said AEW is making stars that make them more appealing to WWE. Without AEW, is Cody who he is today? Like, no. WWE showed you what they thought of him, but then AEW took him to that next step. So that's because of AEW. That is a direct correlation there, and that's the benefit of having two major companies.
Well, yeah. I mean, the king and queen of the ring aren't the king and queen of the ring without AEW.
Exactly.
Both of them are not where they are without AEW, and obviously, you know, Cody helping found it. But I mean, and it's kind of funny because I feel like as AEW has started to pick up some momentum, and I know we're going to talk about the build to All In coming up in just a little bit, but I feel like they've been gaining momentum here in 2025. Things have been getting better. We're more storylines, but they still have that wrestling. And when AEW first hit the scene, it was fresh. It was great because, well, they actually had some great wrestling matches. They had the best wrestling matches. Mm-hmm. And it is still where the best wrestle. Because right now, the WWE in-ring product, the matches that they're putting on, it's not very good right now. Like, every once in a while, you get a good one. Like, I don't want to take away. I mean, certainly on Raw, I think there were a couple of them. But like their PLE, like they just did Night of Champions. And they did interference finishes in what, two of the five matches? Like every single match seems like it's going to have outside interference. I guess even the women's match with Raquel and Rhea Ripley like had outside interference. Like everything has outside interference. Really, do you get to see two wrestlers or even just a triple threat match just go head to head and have a clean finish? Everything's just kind of schmazzy right now in WWE. In I think that is helping out AEW pick up some of this momentum because of what their athletes are able to do in the ring.
We know that McDonald's has served billions for years and years and years, but it's okay to stop in a Wendy's every now and then or Burger King. And if that's what AEW is,
who doesn't need a Frosty every once in a while?
Well, that, you know what? I get my Frosty from AEW.
Right. Yeah, that's
it. And it's okay. Right. And that I'm glad that we at least have a choice. What you just described, Gabe, is long-term storytelling, and sometimes it delivers, sometimes it doesn't, but it's a slow boil, a slow cook in WWE, where over here, there's a lot of action. And again, it depends on what you prefer. Either way, I think we win as wrestling fans, but as far as AEW is concerned, man, just remember where I came from, guys. I came from watching, being a territory guy, watching squash matches every Saturday. And again, Saturday mornings and Saturday nights, watching squash matches, maybe in the main events, just okay. Cause they're just trying to get you into the arena. They're not going to put it on TV. They want you to buy a ticket. And that was the way they did things back then. Today on a Wednesday or a Saturday night, I can watch great matches. I just don't know how the wrestling pundits are able to put together what's a 4-star match, what's a 5-star match, because there's so many almost on a weekly basis.
Yeah, and AEW is never going to have the lineage that WWE has. It's going to take a while to get there. That's how it works. Like, WWE is always going to have that advantage, but even them just sort of pushing WWE. We've mentioned it's sort of down right now for WWE. Like, there isn't that one story, but we've seen what it looks like when there is no competition, and we've seen what they put out there, and we're not in that world, so that's a plus as well.
I don't think GKW exists in that time.
Completely agree.
I don't think we could make it, guys. Yeah. If it was just us talking about WWE and Cena and being corny, they would have shut it the show. They would have shut it.
I would have showed up after that episode of Roman eating dog food and saying suffer and succotash. That'd have shut it down.
I mean, I was pretty checked out on WWE, like the guest host era and all that stuff. Like, literally for me, it was ROH DVDs that like got my wrestling fix in. Like, I wasn't watching weekly. I wasn't ordering PLEs. So that, I think, is just another benefit that I know there's a stupid tribalism, but these two major companies existing is a positive for everyone.
Who are some of the wrestlers you guys think are most responsible for 5 years of AEW being a success?
So it starts with CM Punk. It starts with him because of him coming in after being away for 8-9 years, and then he comes to the United Center in Chicago, and like it's the biggest story that everyone knew, but it was okay. Everybody knew that he was coming in. He comes in and he changes the mood in AEW. And I don't know, the internet continues to show these face-to-face. I don't know if you guys have seen it. You go through your Twitter and everyone's showing like him and Eddie Kingston, him and Hangman, like everyone going after CM Punk. We don't want you here. Like these long 9-10 minute promos against CM Punk, that him and MJF going back and forth. So I just think that he was a linchpin to add the attitude to AEW. And of course the fallout, you know, that was interesting as well. So I think it starts with him in particular.
I throw Hangman out there. Like, we're going to talk about All In, like you said, Gabe, but like the storytelling there to where like, that's the one, I don't know. You can't call him homegrown. Like, he had a career before. It wasn't obviously as marquee as it is now, but like everything he's done, even when not being involved in the world title picture, stuff you're like, oh, this is fun to see. And you talk about the alternative. We're not seeing needles stabbed into people in the WWE. Like, he has been that as well. So that has been a big reason to me is why they've been so successful.
Yeah, I mean, I got to say Jericho as well, because Jericho gave it a level of credibility. As much as people like us love the Elite and starting it, like how many WWE fans were aware of what Cody and the Bucks and Kenny Omega were doing in terms of building this thing up and bringing in Chris Jericho, making him the first champion, gave it, you know, some legitimacy and helped, you know, and again, Jericho, even before that, I think kind of introduced a lot of different people to New Japan Pro Wrestling. Like, well, what's this thing Chris Jericho's doing? Who's he wrestling over there? And having the matches that he had and then continuing the relationship that he did with the Elite into the early days of AEW, I think helped get it off the ground, legitimize it. And I know that we're all kind of happy he's taking a break right now. But early Chris Jericho, especially because those first 3 years, I'd say, whether it was Jericho and then pivoting into the two different, you know, factions that he ran, those were a big part of early day AEW and a big reason why it was successful.
Well, I'd also throw in, I mean, again, because of the sour taste right now, I mean, Mox deserves some of that credit. Like, Mox being that soldier that when the Punk stuff happens, like, all right, no vacation. Like, let me take the belt. Like, yes, the last few months have not been great, but he has been a big part of this 5 years.
So there's like a hand. There's a, go ahead. I'm sorry, Gabe.
I was about to say, I think the last couple months have been better, but I think that's also because of the Hangman addition and everything else that's been going on. I feel, and maybe it's because I've sensed the end is near that I've been enjoying whatever's been going on with the Death Riders a little bit more.
Yeah, I think that those that had a 90-day non-compete and then come to the company, I think we were anticipating some great stuff. Moxley's a perfect example. People could not wait to see the real Mox, not Ambrose, but Moxley come out, the guy that was from CCW, the guy that was at Florida Championship Wrestling. They cannot wait to see that guy be his real self. Like, Ambrose is so far away, and you see Moxley now. However you think of Moxley, everyone was so ready for him to be on top in AEW. And I'll throw another name out there in Mercedes Moné. People said, well, we need Sasha Banks. Where's Sasha? We need Sasha. And then she finally comes. It was a slow start, but now she is so successful and one of the must-sees in that company. So I know this. A lot of this is former WWE flavor, but the point is that they took another step by actually not sports entertaining, but wrestling and having to wrestle. And give Cody his flowers too. Cody was booed out of AEW. Right. Okay, as a white meat baby face. But again, with him being there, admitting that he was one of the EVPs, also a linchpin for what AEW has become.
Yeah, so 5 years in, I think it's undoubtedly a success as we continue, again, to be excited for Collision 100 and everything AEW is going to be doing going forward. But we dive into the other top stories of the week. We call it the three count here on GKW. What is number one this week?
All right, we've talked about Cody Rhodes.
It's time for a cold one?
Yeah.
Holidays.
Cody is the King of the Ring, which means he's headed to SummerSlam to challenge for the title. Zom busted open talking about WrestleMania on the path to Cody versus Cena 2 or whatever number we're going to put on. He said, quote, "The goal with SummerSlam is if people felt a certain way about WrestleMania, I would put that all on my back and take all the credit and responsibility for perhaps not feeling satisfied. I'd like to get them to the finish line at SummerSlam." So what ending to Cody versus Cena at SummerSlam will fix WrestleMania in your eyes?
The Rock showing up. Like, I mean, again, like I feel, well, yeah, that's, and that's the thing. We talked about it in the lead up to WrestleMania where it just kind of seemed like The Rock wasn't going to show up. And you thought, well, he has to, like, it's the only thing that makes sense. And they've largely ignored the final boss since then. But like, The Rock is kind of a key figure in Cody versus Cena. And to me, that's the only way to fix it is if you somehow reintroduce Dwayne to the proceedings, which I highly doubt is going to happen. Like, we, John just can't, he can't go the way he used to be able to. Now, I think he probably moved the best and looked pretty good against CM Punk. Not surprising, because those two always had, I think John's best matches were always with Punk, you know, a decade or so ago. But I don't know how you can fix WrestleMania and how much of a disappointment that was, because when you have a wrestler who can't quite go the way he used to in John, now you have to lean on the story more, and the story fell apart because you leaned on The Rock and then he disappeared. So I don't think there's any ending that we can have at SummerSlam that's going to fix what happened at WrestleMania.
I think that's fair to say. We talked last week about Cody Rhodes. He did this. He did not do this in any other interview except the one that we saw about how he feels like he's at the end of the line of being a babyface. No, just like, what, like who says that out loud? Like, okay, I thought that was very strange. Like that was Kay Adams, wasn't it?
Yeah, At Fanatics Fest. Yep.
Okay, so I was just like, okay, so what does that mean? So can we paint a scenario that Cody loses, and then he turns on Cena and sides with Rock? Is Rock even going to be there? Like, I don't understand. Like, it doesn't fix WrestleMania, but when Cody says, "I'm thinking about being a heel," pretty much is what he said to Kay Adams. Like, so why does that happen? Why must that happen? Is he so frustrated that he's got to turn on Cena because that will make Cena a babyface if Cody becomes a heel? I don't know.
Double turn.
If you play that out, like, are you into that? Because we've talked about how we're not really invested in the Cena heel turn right now. If we see that in New Jersey, does that get you more invested? Cody heel, Cena face?
I mean, it's pretty obvious to me now that Cena is going to be a face to close out the run.
Sure.
But I don't know when he turns back to being a face, but at some point, you know, we're going to hear the music. All the bright colors are going to come out of the Jumbotron. People are going to get to cheer him again. I think that's pretty clear at this point. Again, maybe I'm just crediting Punk here, but I thought that the buildup, while short, very interesting. Yeah. And, you know, it was probably the best thing that John's been involved with since the retirement tour started. Punk coming out to the Thugonomics theme and having fun on SmackDown, having a pretty good match as part of Night of Champions. Like, more of that, you know, where, again, but that's Punk kind of did a lot of the heavy lifting there to kind of make that pretty interesting. So I guess I'm probably more into Cena being a babyface again, so everybody can cheer him on his way out. I don't know if Cody versus Cena double turn at SummerSlam and Cody becoming a heel champion, or however you want to paint that. I'm not quite sure how that works. I don't know. I haven't been able to figure that one out in my head yet. But again, Cody was getting booed, you know, when they were doing the, you know, you hit me, I hit you with Randy Orton. They were cheering Orton and they were booing Cody. So it seems like, at least over in Saudi Arabia, and I'm guessing here in the States as well, like, fan base might be starting to get ready for that Cody Rhodes heel turn.
I it just doesn't make sense to me. I understand that that's exactly what they wanted initially, for Cody to turn heel, and this is why John is in his position now. But just in the nuts and bolts of wrestling, guys, when you turn heel, you have to take up the most of the match. That means you got to be able to control the match. Not only call the spots, but also you get, in some matches, 65 to 70% of the offense. That way the babyface can come out from underneath and beat your ass. John can't do that. he can't do it. This is why I'm sure CM Punk is like, we're going to wrestle, but you got to do your part too, John. I'm not going to carry you all the way through this match like Randy did. I can't do that. Like, I'm older too, and I'm apt to injury. So you're going to have to do at least 50-50, or at least close to as much as possible. And that's why it was the best John Cena match that we've seen one-on-one as champion so far. So, but Brian, I just can't see, like, Cody Rhodes with the Wheatley, you know, vehicle, right, and send all the autographs and gets all this acclaim, number one, either one or two as far as merchandise, and then that just goes away, and him being a heel, like, I can't see that. Well, but it could happen, though.
But it also would probably give you a little bit of, okay, now we probably have too many heels. Because if you do the double turn, like, Cena's going away. Like, Cena, right, Cena's retired, we know. Like, so it's not like you can pencil it. Oh, John Cena, babyface at Royal Rumble. You know, like, you can't pencil that in. So now all of a sudden we're looking at Cody being a heel. We're looking at, so right now both champs are heels, you know, with Cena and Gunther. Yeah. Money in the Bank holder is a heel with a heel faction. Like, there just aren't a lot of strong babyfaces right now to kind of necessarily, you know, to give fresh challenges. So I flipping Cody would kind of create a math problem, I think, right now.
And now we're getting Gunther as a babyface after that. He had the promo of his life going against Goldberg. Everyone was behind him. Like, yeah, I'm going to embarrass you. I'm going to put you out to pasture in 3 minutes. I'm like, yes, there you go, Gunther.
But this path is almost easier for them to figure out. It might not be interesting, but if you had the double turn, you then had the next step of Cody Cena again. Cena wins, and heel Cena, like, there's who's left to challenge him? Like, Ron Killings, I think, still works there, but we've done that already. They're not going to put Orton out there again. Like, there's nothing left there. Like, at least there is a next step if you do Cody and Cena again. Or even if Cena drops the title and face Cody as the champion, Cody's or Cena sort of in no man's land there. Like, they are not in a good spot right now.
No.
Yeah, it all kind of seems to revolve around the world championship, right? Like, we did this when Roman was champ. Yeah. Like, okay, who's a legitimate contender here? Who can they actually do? And yeah, that's, yeah, you're running out. You're running out quickly for guys for Cena, which is why I thought that Orton might win last week, just to kind of prolong Cody versus Cena to a little bit longer, so you still had more options for the end of the tour for Cena. Is Cena taking some time off at some point, or is he actually, like, I don't know what the counter's at right now.
I thought I said that we're not going to see him for a few weeks on SmackDown, at least.
Okay.
No need.
Right.
No need. No, I bet WWE wishes they had AEW's problem, because there's 20 contenders that can take out Moxley. 20. It's not just the I mean, there's people on Collision. There's people in ROH. They all could have good matches with Moxley. You can't say the same thing for WWE.
July 18th, the next Cena appearance on SmackDown. So that's 3 weeks without him.
Okay.
Or two SmackDowns. So not tomorrow and not next Friday, and then he'll be back. But then off a couple, then off a week, and then back for the SummerSlam build.
And shorter appearances, with SmackDown being 2 hours starting on the 4th.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Only two Cena segments instead of seven.
Well, that's so true. But it just seems like, and I'm sure that they've got this book through SummerSlam. They know what they want to do. But, man, it's one thing to just say, here's – we got Roman in our back pocket. We got Cody. Okay, but we got Randy. But what about the rest of the contenders? There's a big middle card, and there's a lot of guys that are not getting a lot of airtime. And then it's the main characters we're talking about. And there's very few versus what AEW has.
I mean, again, when you start talking about baby faces, I think there's a couple that feel just more like, as much as we love Sami Zayn on the show, and I know most of that love is coming from Brian Rowitz, like, he feels like a contender for the World Heavyweight Championship,
right,
not for the WWE Championship, right? It's the same thing with Jey Uso. As over as Jey Uso is, I have a hard time believing that he is going to be holding the gold belt that has the WWE across the front versus the belt that mysteriously looks like the big gold belt from years past, right? So I feel like they have, again, a number of contenders that can go after that World Heavyweight Championship, but the way that they've elevated the WWE Undisputed Championship, that is the list of baby faces for that seems to be few and far between.
Well, if we're looking and respecting the brands and the exclusivity there, guys that are over on SmackDown, but there's limitations in the ring, like, Jacob Fatu is pretty over on SmackDown right now. I would not trust a him versus Cena match. Like, I worry about Cena there, and I feel like Cena probably is like, you know what, I'm good.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that either.
So
No, I
don't think they want to end the retirement tour early.
Right. So seems, there's limitations seems like you have idea. To work around as well.
Yeah, it just they've got bodies, but then again, that like Rusev, not in that conversation as well. Andrade, not in that conversation as well. Like, you know, when Chad Gable returns, Americano. I mean, there's a number of people that we like, that I think we all like on this show, but they don't see them as like top contenders or main eventers for either world championship yet.
That's the issue.
And I think that, again, that's part of what complicates things of Cody versus Cena round two as we head into SummerSlam. What do we got at number two this week, Brian?
All right, we saw a title change on Monday night, the New Day dropping the tag team titles to the Judgment Day. Remember, they turned heel. It was a big deal. Did the WWE screw up the New Day heel turn?
Careful.
Words are hard.
It's difficult sometimes. I'm leaning towards yes, but I'm willing to see what they're doing with the New Day going forward. So I think this was kind of a quick turn that they are quick, obviously a very quick championship reign for them. And it seemed like they just decided to do it. So like everybody in the Judgment Day can have a championship and they can all look cool, all holding up belts. So I understand that. So I'm curious to see what they do with the New Day going forward, because again, they had built up the New Day quite nicely. I mean, it was kind of a disjointed from when they initially turned on Big E and they got a push and then they kind of cooled off, but then they heated back up and you were kind of back into it. And then the fact that they did the Midnight Hour, which is a move they used to do with Big E, doing the big ending while also jumping on top, like the fact that they did that in the tag match, I thought was really cool. But yeah, I kind of want to see where it goes, but okay, why'd we give them the championships if we were just going to take them off? And again, that just seemed like a very, despite everything else seeming very much planned out, this would be, it'd be really cool. Now that Raquel is kind of an unofficial member of the Judgment Day, and now she's got the tag team championships, and there's just five of them because we released some of the dead weight from that group. What if they all had championships? Yeah, let's do that. It seemed kind of Vince-esque of not really thought out and, oh yeah, we'll just figure out the New Day stuff later because this thing is going to look really cool when they all have championships in the Judgment Day.
Sometimes you watch a TV series and it could be five or six storylines within that TV series, and there's one that you just can't stand. For me, it's like the Judgment Day. I try to fast forward through those interview segments because I know exactly what's happening here. Sometimes it's just a waste of my time. And it's just like, oh my God, let me guess. There's problems with the Judgment Day. It's a story that WWE will not let go of. You know, it is amazing that it's lasted this long. As far as the New Day is concerned, it has been wasted. It's because, look, it's easy to book a babyface. I'll put it this way. It's easy to book a heel. It's very difficult to book a babyface. They've been babyfaces, what, a decade, and now they're heels. I think they could have done a lot more. It's more than just being on commentary. It's more than just winning the championships and never defending them and never put them on TV. And then when they dropped the titles, I expected a classic. I thought, well, these guys haven't wrestled for a while. I expected it to be a much better match than it was, and it wasn't. It's kind of like, okay, so now they're going to complain about not being tag team champions as heels, but they don't have an impact. How come they weren't stomping on guys and just like interfering in matches and making more of an impact? I just thought they were booked underneath. I think that was disappointing to me.
Yeah, and I think part of the issue, because I do think it was a waste, like the big part of a heel is the comeuppance from the big baby face. So like Big E coming back would have been the big moment. And the heel turn was done to perfection. I think they set the bar so high that we were so surprised by it, and it was so well done. You're like, damn, this is going to be good. And then we got a few weeks of those promos where like they didn't say anything and the crowd was against them, which was good. But then it was just sort of nothing. Like even them winning the titles at Mania didn't seem to make sense, to where looking at like their match results, do you know how many times they defended the titles successfully since Mania? This was the second time they defended them. So one successful, and then they lost them.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. Like it just, and that's a WWE problem in the way they book tag teams. But like the bar was so high. I'd say honestly, like this was almost a bigger deal than the Cena heel turn when they turned them because of how well done it was. And now we're just sort of left with like, oh, yeah, we'll see him backstage, but there's not going to be much else to follow this.
Especially the way they talked to Big E that way. You thought, and look, the heat was there. It's not their fault. The heat was there. The booking sucked. That's 100%. The problem with them. Yeah.
Well, and how can you not trust those two guys? Like, these are guys that have been stalwarts for over a decade in this company. Like, you know, they can do good character work. All right, just give them something that they can, like like you said, the heat was there.
Yeah.
And I don't know if, you know, the comeuppance for them is Big E trying to find a different tag team that he helps elevate, and eventually they go over the New Day. I don't know what that big comeuppance would have been, because it's tough when you turn on the beloved figure who we all want to come back someday, but realize he's probably not coming back, unfortunately, because of the neck injury. So it's tough for him to get it specifically, but you could have done it in a way that it would have made sense. And again, it was kind of hot and cold, because they made the turn on Big E. For a couple of weeks, it was good. And then, like you said, Brian, like, okay, the build up to Mania was pretty good. Like, they got it, you know, they got the rocket strapped to them, and it's just kind of hot and cold. It's like, sometimes they're there, sometimes they're not, to the point where sometimes I think you forgot that they were tag team champions.
But I think, to your point there, like, that was simple booking, but I think that would have been better. Like, the Big E involvement, him being on screen and like him getting that tag team, whoever that might have been, like, that would have worked. Like, imagine him with the Creed brothers and that being his team, and Big E being in their corner and doing stuff there. Like, that would have worked for a few months. That would have been fun. But we get nothing.
Yeah, Big E as a manager, as a third person, sure. And I really thought that they were going to jump Big E, because that would have added a lot more heat, but it didn't happen. He just kind of slipped out of the ring. But I was disappointed that we didn't see more from them. And that is just, hey, these guys, they're hot on the mic. People boo them when they're on the mic. Mm-hmm. They're tag team champions. The story was is that it's a tag team and tag team champions that never wrestle. That was the story. And unfortunately, they were not booked properly. And so now from there, they'll probably still be complaining about them not being champions. But then what?
Right.
So,
and that's the thing. I know everyone like, oh, the patience. But like, there's no reason to believe this is going to end up okay.
I mean, when did they turn on Big E? That's pretty close to a year ago at this point, isn't it?
Probably.
It was like, how much more patient? Yeah, how much more patient can I be? Like, it's been 10 months. Like, I feel, again, it's been a while. Like, we'll see if they have anything for him. I doubt that they do, coming up this next Monday on Raw.
December 2nd, by the way.
So we've done this for 7 months.
Right. And even that, like, we got that good, you know, leading up to that, where we thought that night was going to be them splitting. Like, you trusted them there, and you did good storytelling there, and that added to the swerve, and it just makes no sense.
Just feel like that matchup that we saw on Monday Night Raw was going to be a lot better. I thought it was good. Yeah. I thought it was going to be a lot better. And I just think that for four guys that can really go, I thought the New Day would do everything they could. They had, again, some unique moves we haven't seen in a while. But maybe it was TV constraints. I just thought that was going to be a banger.
And even that speaks to their value as heels. Like, Judgment Day shouldn't be faces right now. And the crowd was behind them on Monday.
Yeah. Yeah, they were excited for the Judgment. Is that because everybody loves Dirty Dom again?
But he wasn't even out there. Like, it was like,
he didn't come out until the end, you know, when they won the championships. But, yeah, also a championship change without interference.
Wow.
That's rare. Possible? That's very rare in the Triple H regime.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Who knew you could do that? I had no idea. I think that's probably added to the shock.
Triple H is just a product of his environment, because remember, he came up in the Vince Russo era where everything was a 2 or 3 minute match, disqualification didn't matter. So, I mean, for him to throw the DQ outs as often as he can, that's what he grew up with. Not a surprise. Long matches and DQ finishes.
Uh-huh.
That's what he grew up with. That's it.
What do we have at number 3 this week?
All right. We are a little over a week away from that action-packed wrestling weekend that will be headlined by All In Arlington. So from the AEW standpoint, grade the build to All In.
I don't think I'm quite at an A yet.
Okay.
I think I'm at a B+. And I feel like the build has been going great. But again, there's little things. So I texted you guys this last night. Like, I really enjoyed – the segment that they had to kick off the show on Dynamite 300 last night. I really enjoyed the promo that was cut, wanting the Texas Death Match. Mox going, nah, I don't think so. And then, you know, Hangman, you know, trapping Marina saying, hey, give me what I want. Mox gives in, still gives her the finishing move, gives her the buckshot lariat. But like the just put it over the top. Like you could see throughout the entire segment, the key to the briefcase is around Marina's neck. It is on her neck. So once you lay her out, give the people what they want. Unlock the briefcase. Show the championship. Hold it up. You know, if you throw it down afterwards, whatever, to incense Moxley even more. Like there was just there's a couple little things here and there. I think the build's been pretty good, but in order to give it an A, I think they have to nail some of those smaller, a little more details in order to get it up to that A build that has been good, but could be just a little bit better.
I'll even add to that, like, it was a complete accident, but from a camera standpoint, Marina's standing and the key's like over her shoulder now.
Yes.
Like facing the camera to where it's right there before the buckshot. Like it was there, like Hangman just grabs it and all of a sudden you're like, oh, now that's something different. And you have a couple, you know, next week to build to that.
That's the embodiment of AEW, just missing out on the details, little things like that. Just little things like that, right? You know, watching that yesterday, I kept thinking, boy, there's so much heat on this show. You'd think Tony Khan is such a great guy, always smiling, moving around. This guy really is dark. He loves heat. How many times can you beat up Hangman Page? Right. Have they put a paper bag over his head yet? Have they done like the plastic bag Terry Funk thing or the Moxley?
No, have they done have that not. Yet?
Okay, no. That's next. I'm sure that's next. I mean, because this it's got so much heat on the baby faces. So much so that I always think if you're gonna have this much heat on baby faces where they're hit from behind after the bell, they're always, you know, kicked down, thrown down, beat up, that the pay-per-view should just be a list of babyface wins. Like everybody, like that, like no heel should ever lose. There's so much heat. Seriously, man. Same thing with Hangman Page again, because I'm watching, like you said, love the promo, and then the afterbirth, he gets beat up again. I'm just like, is this a rerun?
Right.
Have we seen this again? So that's why it's a B or B plus and not an A, is because you're doing the same things. Now, the only difference is Hangman did get his comeuppance with that clothesline. And I know that got mixed reviews, man on woman violence, especially on national TV. But okay, it's all right. I mean, this is where we are. It's wrestling. But it's little things like that that help hold them back. And boy, if Hangman loses in Dallas after all of this, all this Michigas that we've gone through, oh my God, could you imagine?
Yeah, I mean, Brian can. I cannot. I am choosing not to imagine that, Hood, even though Brian continuously tries to make me believe otherwise.
I mentioned closer to 100% believing it, but I'm not there yet. But in terms of this whole show, I'm willing to go an A already, because looking at the whole show, like, they are doing a good job of building everything. Like, yes, there are misses in the Hangman and Mox, but we care about Hangman. We want Hangman to win. Tony and Mercedes, like, to me, isn't connecting story-wise, but, like, at least they're out there. They're doing stuff. Omega and Okada, they've told us the history. They've given us all that. The Bucks for Swerve and Ospreay, I love the stipulation. It makes so much sense. It adds to that. Like, they're having fun with that. And even the Hurt Syndicate last night, like, that was an awesome part.
But, again, so I think – again, just a small detail that I think could have added more intrigue of Ospreay threw it out there before Swerve, like, even knew about it.
Right.
The Bucks should have just accepted right then and there.
Right.
Because if the Bucks accept right then and there, now you have there is animosity still between these two. Can they still coexist? Instead of Swerve, you know, the Bucks, instead of going, oh, Swerve, do you agree? Do you agree? No, they should have accepted it right away to try to continue to drive that wedge. So again, like, you get that detail right, and I think that pushes it up to an A. So, but again, the Hurt Syndicate stuff has been fun. Whether it's been just MJF who's fighting for the casino gauntlet, but you still have, you know, mixing in there the tag team stuff with Speedball Mike Bailey. Like, yeah, they've done a good job of having, because these cards are so long.
Right.
There's like one or two matches that get thrown on either the Dynamite or Collision right before it happens. And it's like, oh, what's this doing here? Okay, I guess. At least right now, everything that is on that card has some sort of stakes, whether it's a championship or personal. Like there are some sort of stakes in every match instead of just, oh, here's something we think you might enjoy.
And I think as of now, we're only at 7 matches, which they don't need to add to. Like, they're going to go long. I'm not holding my breath that they won't add to, but I think that has given them a little more flexibility and freedom where it's like, oh, this works. And to speak, we talked earlier about the strength of this roster. Swerve and Ospreay losing and not challenging for the world title for a year makes sense, and you can see it because of how strong this roster is. It's not one of those like, oh, well, they're definitely going to win. It's like, no, they could definitely lose and not challenge for a year, and they'd be okay.
7 matches, huh? That means the pre-show must be 2 hours. Filled with 8 matches.
Right. Whatever it takes.
Yeah, I can see that. So when it comes to the Bucks in that challenge with Ospreay and Swerve Strickland, it's interesting because, Gabe, you just laid out a scenario where if the Bucks immediately accept, now Swerve is pushing Ospreay down. Now they're fighting. Right. And mm-hmm. So now it opens up the possibility of, oh, maybe these two will not be able to have a world title match in a year. But the Bucks being EVPs, and there's your detail there. Okay, let's make it official. Swerve, do you agree? Because I have to put pen to paper as an executive.
Sure.
That could have been that too. They didn't explain that, though. But, I mean, that's the only way that where that makes sense.
Yeah, but again, explaining that would have made the story better in a small detail that small takes detail. It from a B to an A. It's just those little details. And I guess I've probably enjoyed, Toni Storm and Mercedes a little bit more. Again, she got to Mercedes put on a heck of a match last night with Mina Shirakawa. That was fantastic, especially adding that element. You know, Mina is just kind of hanging around, and I don't know if she's going to eventually turn on Toni Storm, if that's the reason why she's hanging around this. But I've enjoyed it just because I know that those two are A, going to deliver, and B, when they need to do the character work, like those are going to be two of your strongest performers that you have in all of AEW.
Yeah, they could steal the show, those two, Toni Storm and Mercedes. Yeah.
Well, and that's why I'm hoping for 7 matches, because I think Texas Death is going to take a huge chunk of time in the main event. Mm-hmm. But if you give those two a half hour in the middle of the card, nobody's going to be mad or disappointed.
Shout out to Ontario, California. There was a little bit of a blip in Moxley's promo, and immediately it's like, you fucked up.
Yeah, they got in there fast.
And he stopped. He was like, okay, it was just a little bit of a pulver. F off. Okay, let me finish up this promo. Now, back to you. It was very interesting. It wasn't like a blatant mistake. It was just like a little bit of a blip. That's all.
Yeah, he just like stumbled over a word, which is bound to happen even when you talk as much as they do. Like, it just happens. And they were on top of it, man.
Ah, you fucked up. You fucked up. Like, what? I thought that was kind of funny. Like, Ontario, California, that's a real crowd. And like Pittsburgh on Monday night, that's a real crowd. And Saudi, by the way, awful. Saudi Arabia is, let me tell you, Saudi Arabia is so into WWE that they're acting like the middle America crowd, right? I mean, so they watch it so it's like, okay, a great match is happening. Don't say anything.
Right.
Just cheer the entrances and the finish. That's it.
So ridiculous.
Crazy.
Arlington will be excited.
Yeah, have they? I guess I haven't looked recently. Are they? How close are they?
I think they're still a few thousand away. I mean, it's still a lot of tickets, but I don't think it's a sellout
for All In.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I mean, look, you want to have as much as opening day for the Rangers. That's what you want. That's what you wanted. Because
well, I think that's out the window because they've shrunk it down to like 25.
As of yesterday.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. 19,460. There's still about 3,600 available, though.
Now, again, with perspective, you could put that at the Dallas Mavericks arena and sell it out.
Sure. Yeah.
Don't mean to be harsh, but I'm just saying. Like,
I know we hate the game, but I think gate-wise, I think I saw largest non-WWE in the U.S. ever is what it'll already be.
Well, there you have it. That's a win.
Yeah, because, again, you have – you know, I think the only other time they've gone even close to this was the first time they did Arthur Ashe in the United States.
Right. But that was pretty small, so it wasn't this many.
Arthur Ashe, I thought, held like 20,000.
Oh, were they that bad? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, when they did the first Grand Slam.
Completely sold out. Absolutely, there in that time. But I can't wait to see the empty seats pictures of Globe Life Field when they only set up for 20,000.
So this is from 6 days ago. They were at 19,000 tickets, which brings them to about 2.5 million. It'll end up doubling AEW's best North American gate, which was Forbidden Door 2023 in Canada. It also will be the largest non-WWE pro wrestling gate ever in North America.
There you go. That's a win. They've got the money. It's already in the bank. Good for them. Good for them, man. I so look forward to this card. At first, when we were talking about this, we were like, matches? Hello? any matches? Interest? Any? And now I think that the build has been really good where it's a PLE or pay-per-view from AEW. It's no surprise. But now that we see it on paper, guys, it's going to be fun.
And don't forget NXT Great American Bash at the same time that day. Coincidence.
Yeah, I'm sure. Purely a coincidence.
Pissant company.
What did we have in news and notes this week?
All right. Jeff and Matt Hardy were on the Errol Hawani podcast this week, and Jeff Hardy revealed that he was approached a few years ago to be inducted in the WWE Hall of Fame. He told them no at the time. He said it doesn't feel right going in without Matt. Ariel did follow up asking like why they thought they did that way. Matt said because I worked at AEW at the time.
Pissant company, yeah.
So there's that. I understand them wanting to go in together as the Hardy Boys. That makes a ton of sense, especially as close as they are. He'll headline, especially now they're in TNA. WWE has the relationship. They're both over there. Like, if the Hardys are the headliner for the Hall of Fame class in 2026 at WrestleMania, is that going to shock anyone?
I mean, Matt seems pretty vocal that he wants another run in the WWE for the two of them.
Well, again, there's a lot of things. There's a lot of things I want to, guys, and
I don't want that.
Just not going to happen.
I think it's fine. Just finish up in TNA and then move on. That'll be all. I mean, you don't have to have another run in WWE. But it shows you how petty WWE is, man. Why would you induct one Hardy? Because one of the guys that were involved in TLC, ladies and gentlemen, Jeff Hardy. No. That wouldn't make any sense. Let's wait for them to be both together so you can put them both into the Hall of Fame. That makes sense. Ladies and gentlemen, just Devon Dudley.
Jeff said in the interview at one point just he was Devon. Bigger than Barack Obama. That's how big Jeff Hardy was.
Really?
Yes.
Oh.
that was the comp somehow, yes.
Okay. All right, fine. That's fine.
Kevin Owens on the Cody Rhodes podcast was talking about The Miz. Said, quote, if there is one guy that doesn't get enough credit, it's him. He said everything The Miz does, he makes it work somehow, some way.
I think Miz overall is his career is probably underrated. He's a two-time WWE champ. He's been around forever. And I feel like, he's a company man. So I feel like a lot of the crowd has rejected him for so long, right? Like, oh, he's getting shoved down our throats by Vince McMahon. Like that was an automatic way to get crowds to reject you, especially in the 2010s, right? Whether that was Cena, whether that was Roman, like, oh, Miz, he's just a company man. Every company needs a company guy like Miz. Like, and it's going to be underappreciated. It's not going to be appreciated by the fan base, but I think companies need somebody like Miz who can, oh, this is what you want me to do? Yeah, fine. I'll do it.
Yeah. So R-Truth and John Cena and the Miz and wrestlers of that era had to deal with terrible creative. Mm-hmm. And that's the reason why the Miz stays like, yeah, whatever you want me to do. I know this is terrible, but I'm getting paid. Look at that house I got in Los Angeles. Look at my wife. Look at my family. I'm good. That's what it is. Because when it ever comes to a budget cuts, the Miz is never anywhere close to those budget cuts. Never. Nope. I'll come up. And this is where you can cut anybody. It's WWE, cut anybody. But somehow the Miz always survives. And why is that? It's because the Miz will do anything.
Yeah, and KO said, like, when he was an indie wrestler, he sees The Miz getting Mania main events. Like, how the hell is this guy getting that? Like, I'm better than him. And then he worked with them more. He's like, all right. I don't know if I'd go as far as saying underrated career. Like, he's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
He's just a product. He's a product of what they have been. The bad creative and just hanging around. Imagine what that looks like without the WWE. Imagine him being at the Ukrainian Hall of Los Angeles wrestling for GCW. or being in the 2300 arena. It's like, right. you're in an Indy card. That, I mean, tremendous heat, but he would be lost. Lost.
But that's why, I guess that's what my holdup, like, Roman is someone that was the exact same situation of, like, really bad booking and dog food and stuff like that. But Roman still shined through that. We're like, oh, there's something there. I don't know if I ever really felt that with The Miz.
He's got five moves of Dune, too. It's no, right. We can make the topic of Cena and Miz. What's the difference? I mean, honest to God, seriously, you can put that in the lower third, like Cena, Miz. Really the difference?
Oh, the biggest difference is Miz has a much more punchable face.
That's a photo finish.
Yeah. Well, okay.
I wouldn't punch John. I wouldn't try to do it to John. He's strong. I don't want to mess with him. Miz, I would try.
That's the difference. Yeah. And that's the difference.
I wouldn't know. John, it seems like, you know, very kind man, square jaw, but probably wouldn't want to mess with him if he gets mad. Don't think so. Miz, I try.
Finally, in news and notes, some national exposure for some guys. Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns both reportedly in talks to be a part of the new Street Fighter live action film, and also announced July 24th, Darby Allin will be part of Shark Week. We're quote, he will have an epic close encounter with a shark.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's just a dream come true, right? Like, they're just going to throw him in one of those cages and drop him in the ocean. Like, that's clearly what's happening.
You think there's a cage?
Put him in a sock cage, baby. Yeah.
Put him in there with some shard of glass or something and let him figure it out.
You know what? I don't think Darby needs wrestling. He doesn't need the business anymore. If he's going to be a stuntman of our, if he's going to be the stuntman of our generation, okay, then he doesn't need to be in the ring. He doesn't need to be AEW champion. Doesn't need all that. You know what? If he's going to climb mountains and be a part of Shark Week, wrestling.
But credit to them for actually using the Turner relationship, wasn't it? Just last year, it was Cena like doing some of these spots.
Yeah, he was like hosting. He hosted Shark Week.
Like, no. Makes use no the sense. Talent that's there.
Yes.
That's for your company.
Do it the way Tony does with the very little watched Turner classic movies.
Right.
She keeps that relationship alive, Tony. It's great. There was someone there yesterday on the show.
Well,
right?
No, they had the actress who's going to be playing Lois Lane in the upcoming Batman movie.
That's it.
Or, excuse me, Superman movie.
Superman. Yeah, Rachel Brosnahan. She's a big deal.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
And
good job by them.
And she still hangs out with Turner classic movies, which is good.
Yeah.
So that's how you lose a relationship right there. That's how you do it.
I feel like the only thing they ever did was Cody was on that random ass show with Snoop early on.
Remember that? That was right after Dynamite, I believe. Yeah. The little game show they were doing.
Which I think Cody was still a part of after he left. Like, it was just the timing.
Well, yeah, because the episodes were in the can. They had to play him, Brian. So you can't just throw those things out.
Be better at that.
Strange company.
What did you guys have as your matches of the week?
It starts with Rusev against Sheamus for me.
Meaty men slapping meat.
That's what Rusev wanted more of in AEW. I really do.
They had so many guys they could do that with, too.
Could have been brought to you by Ekrich, and they decided not to.
So, they did it with him in Hobbs.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, he got it.
We saw that. We saw that.
Yeah,
in Chicago,
next to you. Yes. So he got an opportunity to do that.
It's just that. So Rusev couldn't get along with AEW. First of all, fired by WWE first.
Correct.
Goes to AEW in the pandemic. We all remember this. We had the blonde hair and with Kip Sabian, the whole game thing. He was a gamer. Like, it's Rusev. Off of WWE, he's a gamer of all the gamer. So he does that, right? He had very few matches, had this whole thing with his wife CJ that bombed in AEW, and then he just went away. He did not want to lose on AEW TV, so that's why he never came back. Comes back here, and I want to see if this is another step, or is he going to be in the same spot in the middle card? Because Rusev and Sheamus, I need to see that another 10 times. I need this in a steel cage at some point. It was that good.
It's WWE. You'll see it 10 more times. Don't worry.
Steel cage?
Maybe. See what else is going on.
Saturday Night's Main Events, steel cage.
Well, I mean, Sheamus was famously part of a 7-game series, so.
Right.
Yes, he was.
Remember when they did that and then formed the with Cesaro, and then they formed the bar after they fought to a draw in Game 7.
The sideways thumb was the bar. Like, okay, what does that mean? Sammy and Penta against Bronson Reed and Bron Breakker, only because of the story. The story with Sammy and the taped up ribs. Can he go? Can he go? And you just knew that he was going to take the pinfall. But the point is, though, is like, at least there was a story built into that main event on Raw.
Another WWE one I throw out there, Night of Champions was whatever, but we give Raquel a hard time on the show. Raquel and Rhea delivered on Saturday in that street fight. I enjoyed that match.
Yeah, I mean, the finisher off the table that was positioned on the top rope was fun.
Yes.
Certainly was fun.
Yes, I was told by Tommy Dreamer that's a very dangerous spot.
Yeah.
Apparently he tried that twice. And the second time, I think both opponents, he and his opponent, fell through the table.
Well,
and
that's
hit the floor.
And it's trying to balance up there. The ref's like holding. Right. That was the funny part, because the ref's like holding on to it, but also like waving off with his hand, like, "Hey, don't be up there. You can't be up there," while he's holding onto the table. It was just a really funny visual as it was happening. You know, trying to do the, "Hey, you shouldn't be up there" thing that refs always do when they get to the top rope. I thought that was. So then they finally like cut to the opposite angle, so he wasn't like very obviously holding onto the table.
Man, it's the best Raquel Rodriguez match we've ever seen.
100%.
A matchup that I know you did not see, but I watched for you. It's the best AJ Francis match I saw against Mike Santana in TNA.
Oh,
well, I mean,
that's not a long list. No, I mean, AJ Francis. I got to be able to put a spotlight on something that's good.
Good for AJ Francis. I'm just saying it was a low bar to clear.
Or a table to clear. He has a hard time getting over the top rope. And he went right through the table in that matchup. And Mike Santana, I think, is destined. He's an addition to the Slammiversary show they have. It's going to be a three-way for the championship. It's going to be Santana,
Henry, and Triple William.
Yeah, so it's going to be pretty good. Santana has been really excellent on TNA. I think he's a future champion there. I don't know when. I think he's a future champion. And I thought that Mirakawa and Mercedes
and Mina, they delivered last night on Dynamite 300 without a doubt.
Other AEW, it was exactly a week ago, but a Thursday Night Collision, the Kyle battle, Fletcher versus O'Reilly.
Did you see this, Gabe? Please tell me you saw
it. I did. Yes, I did.
Okay. I did. For our listeners and our viewers, it's Kent Washington. Okay. First of all, it's not Seattle. Kent Washington. It's 4 hours of wrestling. You've been sitting there through AEW Dynamite and Collision.
And this is the end of it.
This is the main event of Collision.
Yes, the last match of the night. It's like, oh, thank God. And someone in the crowd.
The Dapper Yapper's voice is probably worn out.
Yes, just like 4 hours of this, right? And the crowd, someone realizes, wait a minute. The ring announcer says it's Kyle O'Reilly against Kyle Fletcher. They're both named Kyle. And so now we get the greatest chance ever. We get Kyle forever.
Kyle's going to hurt you.
Kyle's going to hurt you.
I believe there was a Holy Kyle. Holy Kyle.
There's the Hurt Business. They're singing along with the Hurt Business, remember? We Kyle people.
Yes.
We Kyle people. I'm like, this is unbelievable. I want to just salute that Kent Washington crowd for making that match better than it was. And actually, the match was pretty good. Yes. But just the idea that the crowd was on their feet coming up with Kyle chants in front of like 2,300 people in Kent. I just thought that was awesome.
Just delirious after 4 hours of wrestling coming up with the We Kyle people.
We Kyle people. We Kyle people. It's like, what the hell? And of course, Shivani didn't sell any of it.
Nah.
But the point is, though, is that I thought that the match was good. It's Kyle O'Reilly. Of course, it's going to be good. Yeah. And Kyle Fletcher. But just the crowd just made it. It made me laugh. So I'm fast forwarding through everything. I'm like, okay, let's watch the match. And I was just laughing. Like, there you go.
Well, again, at that point, like a lot of crowds are going to go into business for themselves, right? But they went into the business of Kyle, is what they did.
But even Fletcher playing into it, like at one point, I think it was Kyle's awesome, Kyle sucks. And he's like, awesome, like sucks, like pointing into people. Like
Kyle is awesome, Kyle sucks. So the 18th time we have Kyle Fletcher on, we got to ask him about that match.
Yes.
He comes back on again.
Without a doubt. That's what we're like. We might exclusively talk about that match.
The other one I throw out also from that show, Queen Aminata and Sky Blue. sneaky underrated match.
Yes, Queen Aminata likes to troll on social media as well. Let's keep our eyes on that.
Well, did you? So you saw her the picture of the water bottle. Mm-hmm.
So we should explain
which
that.
Was referencing a Natty post,
a Britt Baker post, a Natty
comment. Oh, that was a Britt Baker.
Yeah,
I thought it was an Natalya post.
No, Natty was commenting. So Britt Baker. Yeah. Let's see if we can find the exact quote.
Well, because it's
about water bottles.
Yeah, the basis of the quote is. Like water, you know, can be worth $1 at the supermarket, $3 at the gym, $5 at whatever arena.
Yeah.
So next time you're feeling like you're not worth it, maybe you just need to change venue. Is basically the original quote that was out there.
And then Queen Aminata posted a photo of a water bottle at a hotel
for $6.50.
$6.50 at the Sheraton. I mean. Why did she do that? It's so funny to me. That's just great.
Yeah.
I love it so much.
If you know situations, that made it that much funnier, right?
Because she added no context. It's literally just a picture of a water bottle at the hotel.
That's good so pop. Good.
Good pop.
That's so good. So so we're in a great spot, guys, with wrestling here in the month of July. And, you know, a couple of super shows. As Brian mentioned, we got the matchup for AEW All In and NXT,
Great American Bash, yeah. It's a historic name.
Well, because you have NXT, you have Great American Bash during the day, you have Saturday Night's main event at night, and then the following Sunday, Evolution. So
Evolution.
It's a good thing that, like, SmackDown's
Friday. What the hell?
Oh, that's my bad. Man, forgot about Ring of Honor on Friday.
Friday night, next week.
I got it covered.
Uh-huh. Okay, I'm there. I mean, come on.
I'll cover it. Don't worry.
It's good that we got nothing this weekend, right? Like SmackDown, SmackDown's pre-taped, right? So you don't have to, maybe you skip it, maybe you watch. It's only 2 hours, easy to jam through. But we need this weekend to rest, right? Start stretching out before we hit all the build to all the big things happening next week.
Yeah, you're lucky it's 2025. Otherwise, we'd be covering the Great American Bash on the 4th of July, what it used to be. Really? The bash matches, yes, in Greensboro. That's what July 4th used to be the hot wrestling time.
Wow.
Crazy, right? The 4th of July. Like, so instead of watching the fireworks, folks, watch Tully against Dusty. First blood. At 20,000 people sold out. Crazy, man.
Yeah. I'd have been right there with them. That's a hell of a lot better than fireworks.
Yeah.
Like, we got rid of fireworks in Milwaukee. We're doing a drone show tonight. What the hell are we doing? Nice. Yeah, no, not nice. Yeah, for real. Not joking. It's a drone show tonight in Milwaukee instead of fireworks.
Those are pretty cool. Not going to lie.
For 45 minutes?
A little excessive.
Oh, wow.
Well, that's your look into the city of Milwaukee in the 4th of July. Comment and subscribe if you happen to miss anything. Like one of our previous conversations with Kyle Fletcher, make sure you check it out on our YouTube page, youtube.com/@goodkarmawrestling. Check out everything we've got going on over there. Have a happy and safe 4th of July. Again, rest up because next weekend, the weekend after that, a lot of wrestling going on. So you know we're going to talk about it right here. GKW.
Hello, the truth?